Are you traveling to foreign countries for work? Do you have clients or colleagues abroad that you'd like to communicate more easily with? Then you should learn to speak a new language and make your business better. Living Language Business courses provide you with the most useful phrases, vocabulary, and cultural tips for business. Try a Living Language Business course for free by using code WSJ2016 at checkout. Visit livinglanguage.com/business to get started.
Now that the election is over, I'll look at the role social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter may have played.
This is Tech News Briefing from the Wall Street Journal.
Welcome. This is the Wall Street Journal's Tech News Briefing. I'm Tanya Bustos in New York. And congrats on surviving the 2016 presidential election. Many are calling it the first real social media election, which is proving to be a little bit of a mixed blessing for social media companies like Facebook and Twitter. Joining us now with a look at how is the Wall Street Journal's Deepa Seetharaman. So, Deepa, it's so interesting to go on social media this election cycle. You know, you really couldn't do it without a bombardment of memes, opinions, rants about the election. And then you come to wonder the impact. How powerful a tool do you think it proved to be? Is there actual data?
Yeah, I mean, last month, Pew Research put together this really, really interesting survey that it showed that I think one in five people saw something on social media that changed their mind about an issue, and okay. 17% changed their mind about a candidate. So, you know, it has the power to change a significant portion of minds, not everybody's mind, but a lot of minds. So it sparked this debate in the last couple of days about what the power of the election, the power of these platforms, and, you know, the rules that they abide by in wielding that power.
Yeah, also making it a powerful tool is just how accessible it is. You know, if Donald Trump has a thought at 3 a.m., tweet it, it's done. And that could be a good or bad thing, but it's powerful in this, you know, world of media.
Absolutely. And we're also very primed and hungry for it, right? I mean, these phones are in our pockets, too. And so we, you know, they kind of cry out for attention, and we want to know what's going on all the time. And so social media is obviously a great source of information and all kinds and news, but, you know, it's also just never ending. So it really feeds the beast.
Yeah, and social media has different standards than the traditional, and it gets tricky because you don't know if what you're reading is true. It might sound fine, but how do you enforce truth on social media?
Yeah, well, we've seen this a lot in the last couple of days. A lot of tech entrepreneurs and executives and former employees at Facebook and Twitter have called, you know, have been debating this. I mean, you know, Facebook and Twitter both insist on being called platforms. They're not media companies. They are technology companies.
Right.
They build tools that allow people to communicate. But there's not inconsiderate number of people who are asking more deeper questions. Like, okay, but how is something spread? How does something go viral? How does something spread on Facebook? What are the mechanisms by which that happens? So what, you know, research has found is people, conspiracy theories in particular, are they get a lot of attention, they get a lot of likes, they get a lot of comments, a lot of people read them, and Facebook has a newsfeed that is primed for engagement. And engagement means a different thing to every person. It's not something that's uniform. You know, it depends on what that person is clicking on. But if that person is clicking on a lot of conspiracy theories, and if their friends are sharing a lot of those same stories, it spreads, and it spreads pretty quickly. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people here in the Valley that are starting to question social media's role in spreading information that might have been false.
Right.
I mean, these are liberal tech executives that are unhappy with the outcome, but I think it's, and you know, it's sparking a lot of debate about what can and can't be done, what's appropriate and what's practical.
This really was the first election in which social media was so essential. You know, Barack Obama tweeted in 2008, and that was relatively new. But, you know, this is different. This was just all-encompassing. I'm wondering if there's any metrics on how much social media was used during the election, specifically election day. I figure the number of people on it, especially this election, must have been through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, there are 75 million tweets. traded just on election day.
Wow.
And Facebook, they say 115 or so million people participated, like shared, liked, commented, posted some type of content and related to the election. And that's like almost 10% of their daily active users.
Wow.
And that's a pretty big, it's a large chunk of the population. And so it was just on the tip of everybody's tongue. You know, I mean, there's a lot of information out there. I think it's an important counterpoint that, you know, we've been hearing from Trump supporters like, you know, Peter Thiel, is that there's a lot of information that was out there. You know, there's no real way to prove that, you know, people were duped into voting for Donald Trump because they saw a lot of fake news on Facebook. It's possible. The information, it was everywhere. I mean, but I think what the real debate is then does a platform like Facebook, does a platform like Twitter, does it legitimize certain types of speech by allowing it to fester? And, you know, hate speech, conspiracy theories, fake news, misinformation, all that. And in doing so, does it harming public discourse? And that's,
yeah.
You know, there's no way to answer that yet.
Yeah, it's bigger than all of us, obviously. And this is a conversation I have a feeling we're going to have again and again. So it's good to get the conversation started. Deepa, thank you as always.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was the Journal's Deepa Seetharaman. She's always covering all things social media for us. That wraps it up for the Tech News Briefing for now. For the Wall Street Journal, I'm Tanya Bustos in New York. Thanks for listening.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously.